Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Revolution Health Radio Show. This show is brought to you by ChrisKresser.com. I'm your host of the show, Steve Wright, and my website is SCDLifestyle.com. With me is integrative medical practitioner and healthy skeptic, Chris Kresser. So Chris, how's the day going?
It's going pretty well. It's absolutely gorgeous here. We have in the Bay Area in what they call Indian summer, late summer. So it's about 75 degrees outside, maybe 80. I don't know. It's really warm, gorgeous, crisp, clear fall day. I'm looking out my window, redwood trees, and feeling pretty happy about being in California right at this moment.
Beautiful. Well, I can't say that Boulder is quite at 75 degrees today. We've hit a little bit of a cold snap, but at least there's no clouds in the sky.
At least you're not underwater, right?
That is true. I do have met quite a few people that did lose homes and can't actually get back to them for several months. So I feel very grateful that my apartment complex was not affected by the flooding here, but it's definitely as bad as some of the pictures made it look.
Yeah, heart definitely goes out to everyone who's been affected by that.
Yes, for sure. So on today's podcast, we're going to talk about how to be insanely productive without destroying your health. And before we get into that topic, though, we need to know, Chris, what did you have for breakfast?
Of course. I saw that we got a few requests for that feature to come back on the comments from the last show. What did I have for breakfast? So today I had some ground beef with liver in it, chopped up and added to it, some onions and some spices. I had some sweet potato fries roasted in duck fat. It was actually a combination of sweet potato and regular potato fries from dinner the other night, so they were left over, so I just kind of reheated them. And then some collard greens that were left over from dinner last night. These were just really simply done. They were steamed, and then I added some ghee to them, and then I had some beet kvass along with it.
Gourmet as always. That definitely beats my bulletproof coffee and frittata.
Well, that sounds good too.
It wasn't too bad. It was pretty simple, just a cheese and broccoli one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, so how do you do what you do and produce all the content, do all the different business ventures and not get sick?
Well, yeah, I wanted to do something a little different for the show today. I know it's not strictly a health topic, but it's something that I'm sure a lot of people can relate to and will be interested in, and it touches on a lot of different health topics because health is actually crucial to productivity. And as you just said, Steve, if we're overproductive, or perhaps I'm not even sure if that's the right way to say it. If we are not efficient in our productivity efforts, it can certainly affect our health. So I wanted to spend some time talking a little bit about this because I am often asked when when I travel and speak at conferences or just meet people, how do you do it? How are you writing a book and raising a 2-year-old and continuing to maintain the blog and doing the podcast and running a supplement company and overseeing all the digital programs you offer, et cetera, and still spending time with your family and taking care of your own health and having a life outside of all that.
You stress me out right there. Gosh, I'm gonna take some deep breaths. Keep going.
Yeah. So the answer really is that I've cultivated over the years a real focus on productivity. I guess you could say I've become a productivity hacker. I've always been interested in strategies for maximizing productivity. I've always paid a lot of attention to that, and I've spent time actively working on increasing my productivity and letting go of things or cutting things out of my life that decrease my productivity. So it's been an area of focus for me for many years, and it continues to be. I'm still learning. For example, I just read an article today that I picked up a couple new things from, and we'll maybe talk a little bit about them. I read books on it. It's just something that's on my radar a lot, because the more I can accomplish in a given period of time, the closer I get to fulfilling my purpose, which is to help as many people recover their health and live their dreams as possible. So we're going to try to get this done in one episode. If we're really productive, maybe we can, but I'm not sure. It's actually a lot of material to cover. And there are five essential strategies that I've identified over the years in terms of increasing or maximizing productivity. And I'll just mention them here briefly, and then we'll talk about each of them in a lot more detail. So the first is to move your body. The second is to clear your mind. The third is to plan and prioritize. The fourth is to rest and rejuvenate. And the fifth is to play and have fun.
So in each one of these, are we going to talk about what you had to cut out and then what you do positively?
If you have any questions specifically about that, you feel free to ask. I'm going to cover probably that and more. Maybe not exactly in that formula, but I'm gonna cover, what things, where you might get stuck in some of those areas, what my recommendations are, and why you should even be paying attention to them in the first place.
Well, let me put you on a side tangent before you even get there, because I found in my own life, as I try to become more productive, as I try to start more habits, that I've had to, like you said, let go of some things and be kind of ruthless with certain areas of my life. So I'm just curious myself, and I'm sure some listeners are, do you have like a top one or three things that you think that, or at least you had to cut out in order to sort of take on these new habits and these new things?
I do. And I think, well, that's a great question. I think it will actually be easier and make more sense to answer that in the context of those five strategies that I just mentioned. So,
awesome.
The first was move your body. And actually, I was reading an article, I can't remember where, it was an interview of Richard Branson, or it was mentioning Richard Branson in the context of productivity, because he's known as someone who's highly productive. And somebody, I guess they were on his, 90-foot yacht or something, some party that he was hosting.
His island.
No, it was on the way to the island, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. And so the person who wrote the article asked him, what's your secret? What's your secret to staying so productive? And was expecting, this kind of maybe longer answer. But he said, work out. That was the secret. And it actually, it's maybe not a secret, but if there's one thing that can help people to increase their productivity, especially if they're not physically active right now, it's becoming physically active. There's so many studies that suggest that physical activity improves cognitive performance. Just a wide variety of literature on this topic. It's not really controversial at all. But a lot of people, of course, are wondering, part of the problem is that I feel like I'm not productive enough, so then I don't have time to work out because I'm, trying to get things done, which is one of the traps that you can get into. And for me, I've just been ruthless about not letting exercise and physical activity get superseded by anything, really. I mean, unless it's just absolutely dire that I finish something. But even then, I will tend to cut something else out of my day and make sure that I get some physical activity, because I know it's just that important to my performance. It's another reason that I'm become a believer in integrating more physical activity into my daily routine. And I suggest that for others. I'm going to have a whole chapter on this in my book that's coming out in December, but there are essentially three strategies for how to do this. One is to sit less. Two is to increase your non-exercise physical activity, which I'll explain in a moment. And three is distinct periods of exercise. And this framework was conceptualized and put together by Dan Pardee over at Dan's Plan, who we've had on the show before. And he's done a lot of really great work on this. It's a real interest, a research interest of his. And the Dan's Plan is a really great tool for helping you to integrate these kinds of this kind of approach to movement into your day. As far as sitting less goes, we've talked on the show before about how detrimental sitting is, even if you're getting adequate physical activity during other times of the week or the day. So I suggest sitting less, which means maybe standing about half the day if possible. So a good strategy there would be to get a standing desk. If you can't get a standing desk, and even if you do have one, take frequent breaks every 40 to 50 minutes, let's say. And even a 2 minute, the studies have shown that even a 2 minute break, so if you sit for 40 minutes and you get up for just 2 minutes and you walk, go to the bathroom, go get a glass of water, just walk around a little bit, take your eyes away from the screen, that can have a significant impact. It can really reduce the harm that sitting causes. It doesn't sound like a lot, but it's enough to reverse a lot of the harmful impacts of sitting. So one tool that I've found to be really helpful for reminding you to do this is called, it's a software application called Time Out. This is on the Mac. I think a similar one for PC is called Workrave. And essentially it runs in the background. You can determine what intervals the reminder pops up at, but it has short breaks. I think my short break is configured for every 10 minutes. It's a 15 second break, and I'll just look away from the screen, rub my eyes a little bit. It's important to look away from the screen periodically, because that staring at a two-dimensional surface right in front of our face is not what our eyes evolved for, and it can have a detrimental effect on our brain. So, you know, in those short breaks, I'll look away from the screen a little bit, and then I have a longer break configured for 45 or 50 minutes, and I'll that's a 3 to 4 minute break, and I will either step away. If I'm on my treadmill desk, I'll maybe go over and do some pull-ups or some push-ups or whatever muscle group I'm working on that day. I might go get a glass of water. I might go outside and walk around a little bit in the sunlight, run up and down the stairs in front of my house or something like that. So that can be a really helpful tool just to remind you to do that throughout the day. And I guarantee you, if right now you're sitting for most of the day and not taking really many breaks at all, if all you get from this podcast is this, and you install Time Out or Workrave, and you take a break, you know, a short break every 10 minutes where you look away from the screen, and then a longer break every 40 minutes, you will feel like a different person. So the next step, so that was sitting less. The next step was increasing your non-exercise physical activity. And one easy way to do this is just walking more. And as I've discussed before, I suggest aiming for about 10,000 steps a day. And you can use a device, a pedometer like the Fitbit, to track your number of steps. If you work in an office most of the day, that can be a little bit challenging. One thing you can do is you walk or bicycle to work. If you live too far to do that, you can drive part of the way and park, you know, a ways away from the office, and then walk the rest of the way. Commute by foot or bicycle to do your grocery shopping. You can get like a trailer for your bike that you can carry lots of stuff on. You can do your own gardening. You can do manual labor around the house and in the yard. You can take the stairs instead of the elevator. There are a lot of different ways. If you're looking for opportunities to stay active throughout the day, there are a lot of different ways that you can do that.
And I don't know if the listeners are going to hear it, but Sylvie was really encouraging everyone to heed that point.
That's right. She's become quite a vocalist lately. She's making up her own songs and singing at the top of her lungs all through the day. It's just amazing to watch. I love it. Especially during my podcast, she seems to really...
she was just urging us to hit 10,000 steps.
Yeah. So, and that's interesting parallel there. Kids are just so naturally active, you know, that it's rare that they're just... going to sit around on their butts. They're always exploring and moving and using their body in interesting ways. So it's and being with kids is a really great way to, or a pet if you have, like getting a pet if you don't have children, or even if you do, can be another way to increase your activity. So the last one would be distinct periods of exercise. And this can take a few different forms. You could do like 150 minutes a week of moderate activity, like jogging or yoga or things like that. 75 minutes of more vigorous activity, like sports, soccer, basketball, tennis, etc., more strenuous yoga. Or 30 sets of the most intense activity. So those would be intervals like sprints or lifting weights, either to failure or almost to failure, things like that. Or you can do some combination of all of that, which is what I do. I think strength training, doing some strength training in that mix is especially helpful for me, for my cognitive performance and productivity, I've noticed.
It's really important for mine as well.
Uh-huh. So one thing I do want to say, of course, is that physical activity is crucial for productivity, but like everything else, it can be taken too far. And if you get yourself into an overtrained state, that's actually going to have the opposite effect on your productivity that you're looking for. A lot of my patients have pretty severe adrenal fatigue, and that compromises their ability to concentrate and focus. They have difficulty with word recall and memory. So it's sort of the Goldilocks thing, where just the right amount of physical activity can really increase your productivity. Too little or too much can decrease it. All right, so that's number one. Any questions about that, Steve? Observations?
Well, I'd say just kind of talking with you on a regular basis for the past year or longer, it seems like ways that people could really make significant gains in this one tip area was it seems like for you anyways, that the treadmill desk was sort of like a game changer.
It was a huge thing, a huge game changer for me, because as I'm sure many others can relate, it's hard if you're working and you're really busy throughout the day and your work requires you to be in front of a computer or talking on the phone. It's difficult to reach the 10,000 step goal. You could get up earlier in the morning and do that, but of course you don't want that to cut in. You don't want to cut into your sleep, and you can exercise after work. But for me personally, I found that integrating activity throughout my day was the biggest game changer. And, in a general sense, and then specifically the treadmill desk was the most helpful tool for integrating activity throughout my day, along with some of the at-home exercise equipment that I have now in my home office, some of the straps and pull-up bar and jump rope and power blocks and weight bench and things like that, so that it's really easy for me to just step away from what I'm doing and do a quick set, of strength training or more aerobic type of training.
Yeah, it brings to mind this movie that I can't recall right now about a bunch of stockbrokers, but the guy's like doing curls and stuff while he's on the phone being like this really successful stockbroker. So he's obviously very vain.
I haven't gone that far yet, but I am on the treadmill often when I'm talking to my patients. And the only reason I haven't done it with the podcast yet is that the microphone that I use is so sensitive, you'd probably hear this constant whine of the treadmill in the background.
All right. Well, when we see you on your book tour, man, we're going to be looking at your biceps to see where they're at.
Well, yeah, you can look at my biceps, but I haven't figured out a way yet to be on a treadmill desk while I'm speaking on the tour, but standing up is good. I won't be talking to people sitting down. That's for sure.
Awesome. Well, here's the last question. I think a lot of people would like to know, when you choose to do dedicated exercise, if it's at another facility, or even if it's just at your house, do you prioritize that at a certain time in the day? And if so, is there a reason for it?
I used to, and probably will go back to having more distinct periods of exercise once the craziness of the book has passed. In the last year, while I've been writing the book, or 9 months or whatever it's been, I haven't really had as much sort of distinct exercise. I've been integrating all of that physical activity that I mentioned throughout my day. So instead of saying, yeah, I'm going to go to the gym and work out for a half hour or 45 minutes or whatever, I will do all of those sets and the sprints and the intervals and the more vigorous and even moderate activity in all the way through the day in short bursts. And then I, you know, will also do things like go on hikes or go surfing, or when I'm able to find the time to do that, which is a lot less than I would like at this point. But those are distinct periods of exercise. But otherwise, I've been focusing more on integrating it.
Okay, awesome. And I'm sure, obviously, having children and pets is definitely going to play into that. I know for myself, if I don't do it right away when I get up, like within the first hour, if I don't head off and actually go do my distinct exercise period, the chances become extremely slim that I'll actually get back around to that by the end of the day.
Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about that strategy too in the context of productivity. But yeah, I think a lot of people feel the same way, that if they do it right when they wake up, they'll be more successful.
Awesome. Well, let's roll on to tip number two.
All right. So number two is to clear your mind. And really, it's as simple as this. A clear mind is a more productive mind. And you can't be productive if you're completely distracted, stressed out, and unfocused. But unfortunately, this has become the default state for many of us in this culture. As you know, new technologies have become available and the pace of work life seems to have increased. The expectation of when you're working seems to have, the boundaries that used to exist there seem to have kind of liquefied in many cases, where people are checking their phone at home and on the weekends and on vacation, and there's no, you know, the work emails are coming into the same account, or they're checking those from any time and place. And so there's just, instead of, you know, even just maybe 20 years ago when someone was on an airplane or riding a bus or a train or they're on vacation, they actually were able to step away from the constant barrage of thoughts and, you know, related to work and issues that are arising and fires that need to be put out, just by the nature of being away from the office. But now that's just become increasingly difficult, or at least it requires an increasingly greater amount of discipline and planning to get away from those kinds of distractions. So,
well, even 10 years ago, you know, Facebook wasn't even popular yet, and PDAs were the only smart thing you had in your pocket. So,
right. So it's a profound change, and we're so adaptable that we quickly get used to whatever our normal reality is, and we forget that there was ever anything different. But we're in the midst of this crazy experiment right now, and I think it's affecting us in really profound ways, as we discussed on a previous show about electronic media. But it's notable, and so I want to kind of stay on track here, bring this back to the subject at hand. There are some strategies that have been especially useful for me for clearing my mind and eliminating those mental distractions and managing the stress and staying focused. And the first, as I'm sure you won't be surprised to hear, is my meditation practice and mindfulness practice. And this is something that I started doing when I was 17. It's been a huge part of my life and a significant contributor to my productivity. There are a lot of misconceptions about meditation, I think, in the West. It can be a spiritual practice or part of a spiritual practice. In many cases, the technique that most people understand as meditation originated in Eastern spiritual practices. But it can also be used by anybody, regardless of religion or lack of religion as a way of cultivating awareness and attention. And if you think about it, it's not too difficult to understand how a practice that improves your ability to keep your awareness and your attention, your awareness in the present, and to keep your attention focused on something would be really useful in a state or in a culture and in a work environment where there are constant distractions. So if you're sitting and you're meditating, let's say, for 20 minutes, what's going to happen is you're going to have lots of different thoughts, hundreds, thousands of thoughts during that period of time. You're going to have all kinds of sensations. Your knee might hurt. Your neck might start to hurt a little bit. You might feel some air against your skin if you're outside. You might notice a change in the temperature. You might hear some people doing construction work across the street. These are all sensations that you become aware of while you're sitting there. But the practice of meditation is depending on the particular technique, is to bring your attention back to the present. And so rather than pursuing a thought, you know, if you have the thought, what am I going to cook for dinner tonight? Instead of going to the next thought and thinking, oh, I could get this out of the freezer and then I could do this. And then, you know, as soon as you become aware that you had that thought, you bring your attention back and you just focus on your breath and some techniques, or some other part of your body and other techniques, or an awareness of the present moment in other techniques. So what you're doing there is you're practicing mindfulness. You're practicing focus of attention. You're practicing cultivation of awareness that is not easily distracted by all of the vagaries of the mind and of the body and anything that else that might come into your attention while you're sitting. And of course, like anything else, that practice then translates into other areas of your life. So if you're sitting and you're writing a chapter for your book, for example, and you have a thought that, oh, wait, I was supposed to, you know, send this email, or I forgot to check this or whatever, instead of just as a knee-jerk reaction going to do that, you maybe make a note of it. Maybe you take a second to write it down on a piece of paper so you don't forget, but you continue writing, and you've developed and honed that ability to stay focused and keep your attention on what you're doing through the meditation practice. So that's how it can be such a valuable tool for productivity. And of course, there are many other benefits to it that aren't related to productivity that we're not going to go into right now. But I really feel like that is one of my secret weapons in terms of how I can do what I set out to do.
Do you have any practices where you sort of kind of have some activities that you know that are going to get done today, so that you can also help sort of ground your mind when you think about those other things that you might want to do in your many vast things, like where today is only book writing or something like that?
Yeah, we're going to talk about that's pretty much what plan and prioritize is all about, which is the next one. So you're thinking in the right direction.
Yeah. So do you, for somebody who's kind of listening to this, and just like you said, like, you know, do one of those three types of activities. If you do all three, you're probably going to change your life. Is there a minimum level of something that we should encourage everyone to give it a shot with?
Yeah. So first of all, for people who are just starting out, I mean, there are many, many different ways to learn meditation and mindfulness. As with most other things, having a teacher who's really experienced and knowledgeable is the best way. And you can look into local meditation centers, Zen centers, Vipassana meditation centers. You can look into mindfulness-based stress reduction training, which is offered in hospitals and other places around the country. But there are some fantastic books, and there are some fantastic audio programs that you, if you can't find a teacher, or you don't have time to look for one right now or whatever, there are a lot of DIY resources available. So two of the better books, if you're just starting with meditation, would be Buddha in Blue Jeans by Sheridan Tai. That's more about Zen meditation, which is what I practice. And then there's Meditation for Beginners by Jack Kornfield, which is another Buddhist meditation practice. And those are both really good resources, really good way to get introduced to the basics. There's a free audio program on mindfulness-based stress reduction, several free audio programs that you can download from a particular URL that we can put in the show notes. And as far as your question, Steve, the best tip that I have is for learning meditation is to start really small. So instead of saying, yeah, I'm going to meditate for an hour every day this week, in most cases, if you try that and you've never meditated before, you'll just be setting yourself up for failure. So rather than doing that, I would suggest saying, I'm going to meditate for 5 minutes for this week. And each day, and set a particular time that you're going to do it each day. And if it can't be the same time because of your work schedule, plan in advance what time you're going to do it and schedule it on your calendar and treat it like an appointment, just like any other. And then sit down and set a timer for 5 minutes and, you know, rain or shine, show up and sit down and do it. And even if you feel like going for longer, don't go for longer, because the other side of that is if you feel like doing shorter and stop, you don't want that either. So just stick with the time that the goal that you set. And what will happen is if you're successful with that, you know, and you achieve that small, seemingly small goal, you're building a habit. And there's the skillful way of building habits is starting small, giving yourself a chance to be successful right off the bat, and you gradually over time will create that habit, and you can then start increasing the amount of time that you spend sitting by maybe a minute a week or a couple minutes a week, and before long you'll be at 20 or 30 minutes or an hour or whatever it is that you're shooting for. So I would say just starting with, you know, 3 to 5 minutes a day for a week can have a really profound effect.
Awesome. And it might be, you know, this is definitely one of those things where, you know, paying money to begin a habit like this that has a high perceived chance that you won't follow through might really help actually cement that. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons to buy a personal trainer, especially because they can really help transform your physique. But the other thing is that you have a defined appointment that you have to show up, and you know that you're accountable to somebody on a regular basis.
Exactly. I think that's a really excellent tip. And I would add to that, you know, joining a group, getting some kind of support. And then there are some other, this is a sort of different topic, but there are some other tools that can be really helpful in establishing new habits. It's ironic because these are technology-based and therefore could be a distraction for some people, but there's a website called lift.do, lift.do, and it's very, very simple. It's a simple interface. You list what habits you're trying to cultivate, and then you just check them off each day. Like, so if your goal was to meditate for 5 minutes, you just check it off when you did it. And there are all these gamification features, like people can give you a thumbs up and comment on your status. And if you've done it a certain number of times in a row, you know, I think you get some kind of a badge, and everyone on there is kind of supporting each other. So it can be a useful tool just for keeping things that you're trying to add into your life present in your mind. And we're all kind of naturally competitive, even with ourselves. So just having, if you've meditated for, you know, 33 days in a row, for example, nobody wants to break that chain. And so there's a natural kind of competitive urge to keep those things up.
Yeah, I mean, there's always the principle, what you don't track probably won't change. So I really like the Lift app. And I just did a post on kind of creating habits and some of the things that I've used. And that was one of the recommendations I made.
Cool. All right. So there's a second important strategy in terms of clearing your mind. And this is, of course, related, but it's eliminating distractions. So I often hear people say, and I've said it myself too, of course, that it seems like there's not enough time in the day to accomplish what I need to or want to accomplish. But there are some big caveats here for some people, at least. The average American devotes half of their leisure time to watching television. And now when you add computer activities like social media and email, it's probably even a greater percentage of leisure time. You know, there's nothing wrong with social media and email and checking our phone, which the average person, by the way, does 150 times a day. So if you consider that that's an average, you know there are, of course, people who are checking their phone 300 to 400 times a day. There's nothing wrong with all of that, but it can become excessive and it can become a distraction and it can become a way of procrastinating and not engaging in the things that we want to do to meet our goals. Especially if we're having like some difficult feelings or difficult thoughts, it's very easy to just try to distract ourselves from them by checking our email or logging onto Facebook or whatever your chosen method of distraction is. These things are so ubiquitous now. What I was saying earlier, how this has just become the new normal, that often people don't even question it. But it's really helpful, I think, to step back and look at these types of behavior and ask ourselves the question, do we really want to live in that kind of relationship to ourselves and to the technology around us? Do we want to give that much energy to all of these distractions? Like, each time, you know, we choose to go onto Facebook or Twitter or check our email when an email comes in and we hear a beep or even answer the phone that rings, if we're in the middle of something, we're making a decision, whether we're conscious of it or not, to shift our attention away from whatever it was that we were doing that we set out to do, that we established as being important to our purpose and mission in life or to our vocation and livelihood or our health or whatever it is. We're making a decision that we're going to prioritize this other thing. Oh, you know, even if it's just like checking out what our friends are doing on Facebook or seeing what email just came in, we're prioritizing that over accomplishing our goals. And I think it's really helpful to think about it that way, because a lot of times those decisions are unconscious. And this is, again, where meditation comes in. It helps us to be aware of when we're making those decisions. But I think if I asked most people in these terms, like, if I was able to kind of be over your shoulder and you were working and all of a sudden, you know, the email comes in or a notification comes up that some friend posted something on Facebook and you go over and look at it. And if I asked you in a non-judgmental way, is that really more important than what you were working on? I think most people would say no. But the problem is it's just become unconscious behavior. It's become compensatory behavior for, you know, when we feel distracted and overwhelmed. And it's become kind of socially accepted and almost like in some circles, almost like a badge of honor, you know, like how many emails you get, how hyper-connected you are, how many friends you have on you know, Facebook and other social media, et cetera. And there's almost kind of like a value, you know, a real value placed on those things. And I think that's a value that's really been unexamined in a lot of the dialogue, the public dialogue about this stuff. So again, I'm not saying don't use Facebook. I'm not saying don't check your email. I'm saying be conscious of how much energy and attention you want to give to those things and increase your, especially when they, you know, when you're doing some other activities that are directly contributing to you reaching your goals, whatever they are. So Well, one more thing about that. You know, some distraction is natural and healthy. And in fact, you know, we're going to talk about that later. It looks like it's going to be another episode because we're still, it's 45 minutes into the hour and we're not even to number three yet. But some distraction is natural and healthy and even productive. And the mind needs a break. And taking a little break is helpful, as I mentioned before. But most of us can tell the difference between a healthy distraction and an unhealthy distraction. One feels like it's benefiting our productivity and is helping us achieve our goals, and the other feels kind of compulsive, addictive, and destructive in terms of how it affects us and our ability to reach our goals. So let's get a little bit specific in terms of recommendations here. One thing I can recommend right off the bat, if you haven't done this before, is using an application like Rescue Time, which is a web-based application. I think they have you download a little desktop thing for your Mac or PC or whatever you use. And what it does is essentially tracks how you're using your time. The free version only tracks what you do online on the computer and online. But there's a paid version that's pretty cheap that where you can also track your offline activities like phone calls and meetings and things like that. And most people who I get to do this are actually quite shocked at how they're spending their time throughout the day. And when they realize how much time they're devoting to social media and email and other things that don't necessarily that aren't productive, that don't necessarily get them any closer to their goals, it's a big wake-up call. So I think awareness is really the first step in behavior change, and something like Rescue Time can really help if you have any question about how you're spending your time. So number two would be batching email and social media. And this has been another, you know, I would say top three or top five change in my life that has dramatically increased my productivity. So what I mean by this, and those of you who've read Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Workweek will know exactly what I'm talking about. But this means dedicating a certain period of time or periods of time each day to email and things like social media, and then not engaging with those activities anywhere outside of those dedicated times. So for example, depending on the day, I might have 2 or 3 dedicated periods where I check email and social media. And this will vary, of course, depending on what your vocation is. I mean, some people, due to the nature of their job, have to be a little bit more in touch. But even if you had to have 6 times a day where you checked, it's still far better to have those be distinct periods and schedule them and put them into your schedule than it is to just kind of do it whenever an email comes into your inbox. There was a study done, I can't remember what the actual number was. It was shocking. It was hundreds of times that people who had notification turned on for their email would look at their email throughout the day. The average employee, it was something like, it was several hundred times a day. And so along with batching email and social media, the number three recommendation would be to turn off notifications. So I have all notifications except for like text messages and calendar reminders turned off on my phone and iPad. My email, I use a dedicated application for email and a client on my computer, and I just quit it when I'm done with my email period. So I have no way of being notified when someone sends me an email or if anyone responds. I have Facebook notifications for my page turned off. So I don't get any notification if someone sends a message or responds to something I posted, or the only time I know about that stuff is when I go in and during my social media times and actually look at the page and check the notifications and things like that. And that alone freed up a remarkable amount of time in my day. And, you know, when social media and email became a bigger part of my life, I just, like everyone else, was using it the way that everyone else was using it without really any examination. But when I first I think the first time I was exposed to the batching idea was before Tim's book came out. I had heard about it maybe through him or somebody else, but since then I've really adopted that in earnest. And actually there was a period of time about 3 months ago where I was just so busy with the book and communicating a lot with my publisher, et cetera, where I fell out of the habit. And I thought at the time that I had to do that because of everything that was going on. But what quickly became apparent was that my productivity plummeted, and making myself available at all times throughout the day for the emails didn't serve them. It didn't serve me. It didn't serve my goals. So I'm a pretty busy guy, and I know there are people out there that are busier and maybe have more demands in terms of their availability. But if I can check email only 2 times a day, 2 or 3 times a day, most people can probably get by with that as well. So you may need to put a little thing on the bottom of your email, like an autoresponder that says, I'm only checking email a couple times a day. So bear with me if you don't get an immediate response or something like that. I never bothered to do that, but some people do that. I'll occasionally get emails, responses from people that say that when I send them an email, and I always appreciate it. Actually, it doesn't bother me at all. But this is a potential game changer, I think, for a lot of people.
Yeah, it's on my list of things. Now that we've talked about it, I'm gonna have to implement it, because I've known about it for years, and I've tried it at times. I just never stuck with it, like you said. So I know that. And then what you were talking about earlier with distractions because of the internet, there's a pretty good course on productivity that Eben Pagan put out. And in it, I believe he called it Internet Loose, but Jordan and I both, we found, had these unconscious internet loops. And so that course really taught us to get aware of our usage on the computer. And it turned out that I would loop between these certain sports sites and media sites. And so nowadays I can actually catch myself as I go to the first site and be like, oh, nope, that's not what we're supposed to be doing right now.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's like it's sort of just like a knee-jerk behavior. And it's very easy. I think the thing that's kind of fascinating and scary about the internet to me, it's like, I think it would be really interesting. I wonder if anyone's ever done this in the art world or something, to see like a physical performance of what browsing the internet looks like. You know, like if you were to kind of act out how, you know, most people, how they browse the internet, like you quickly go from one site to the next, you know, like you're looking at this and you click on this link and this window opens and you close that and this video plays. And then you know what I mean? If you were to kind of physically act that out, the person would look like they're absolutely crazy, yeah. You know, or they're on like speed and caffeine and every kind of stimulant you could imagine. They'd just be like bouncing off the walls and they'd be institutionalized, you know, but we can do that sitting in a chair or standing, if we're lucky, looking at a screen, and it looks and seems normal. But our internal experience is actually closer to what the person who's is acting that out physically is, right? And that is what I mean by this kind of crazy level of distraction that we're faced with all of these new technologies. And if we don't examine it continuously and keep and bring our attention and our awareness to it and continually ask ourselves if that's the way that we want to be living, and that's how we want to be experiencing life, then we're just going to keep doing it. Because as we talked about in the podcast about how the internet is rewiring our brains, these behaviors are addictive. So they're not, it's not totally benign. It's not, if we just let momentum carry us, we'll continue engaging in these behaviors, whether they serve us or not.
Well, I also believe it's a double whammy too, because not only did you take some time off of whatever project or whatever thing, that goal you were trying to achieve at that point in time, but I can't remember if it is 20 minutes, but I know there's been some studies about distractibility and how long it takes for you to get back to that state of flow, or at least concentration on what you're doing. And I know for myself that if I do hop outside of the project I was working on and get into that internet loop, or even go check a study or something, just getting back into the writing flow or blog or whatever I was doing can really take like 10 minutes. And so you like lose this productivity, not to mention you lost the time in which you're just distracting yourself.
Yeah, it can take at least 10 minutes. I think for some people, it might be almost more than that, you know, and they might never get back into it, at least that day, if one thing leads to another and one distraction leads to another, which is often the case. So yeah, it's a big deal.
Well, I'll share one tip that's helped me on this. It's a site called focusatwill.com. And they state that there's some research out there about how distractible your brain is and how it is looking for that stimulus that you were talking about, Chris, where at some point in time, your brain needs some extra stimulus. And as it's hearing sounds, there's certain predictable patterns in which your brain will start to search for a new stimulus. And so you can use it for free, or you can get a paid membership, but they have different types of music that they've synced up to these brain patterns in which your brain will start to search for a new stimulus. And it switches the music right about that time in which it's supposed to happen. And it's definitely up my ability to stay on task when I'm using it.
That's fascinating. I didn't know about that. So we'll definitely have a listing. See, we'll have to go through and collect all these resources and list them out on the web post for the show. There's one more productivity tip that a lot of experts agree on, and I've definitely found to be crucial, and another probably also in my top five in terms of increasing my productivity, which is to do what some people call your frog, which is the activity that you tend to procrastinate the most about. It's usually something that really needs to be done. And often that you want to do, but that is, there's some fear in it, or it's something you're not familiar with or comfortable with, or requires a lot of focus, to do that activity the very first thing in the morning. So don't get up and check your email. Don't get up and start social media. I mentioned batching email and social media, but another thing, the absolute rule for me is I do not, except in rare cases when there's something I absolutely have to attend to, I don't check email first thing in the morning. I usually wake up at about 5:30. And depending on the day, if I sit first or do some activity, I might start working at about 6, and I will work and do writing or, you know, blog posts or preparing for a conference or whatever. Anything that requires a lot of attention or something that I've been putting off, I'll do that before breakfast. And I will rarely check my email before breakfast. So that's another big tip and one that's been really useful for me. I think we may need to stop there, Steve. It's in keeping with our the value of taking breaks and not trying to pack too much information into one short period of time. We've covered two out of the five areas that I want to cover. Plan and prioritize, I can do fairly quickly. Rest and rejuvenate will take a while, perhaps naturally. And then play and have fun is a little bit shorter too. So I think we'll definitely be able to knock it all out in the next show. But let's have a part two and come back next time and finish this off. And this will give you some time to work on some of the things that we've talked about today, because you know, as I mentioned earlier, if the one change is just becoming more physically active as far as moving your body, and then you make one change in terms of clearing your mind, which would be like doing some sitting meditation practice 3 to 5 minutes a day for a week, that will have a huge impact on you. And those are big changes. So let's give you some time to do those, and then we'll come back and finish this up.
Yeah, and I think what would be really awesome is if when they listen to this, if you listeners listen to this, choose at least one thing to try, whether it's a tool that Chris talked about or like the exercise thing or several things. And then on the next show in the comment section, let us know what you tried, or even on this comment section, let us know how it's going, what's working, what's not, because a lot of different things work differently for different people. I know that my mornings, as Chris was talking about, you know, choosing your most important thing or the hard thing to work on, if I script out my morning ahead of time, exactly what I'm doing and what I'm going to work on first and everything, my morning goes so much better. I have so much more productivity. But that act of like scripting out to the minute, you have to make that a habit. So
absolutely. And we're going to be talking more about that in the plan and prioritize section of the next show.
Perfect.
So, Steve, that course you mentioned, is it on evergreen, ongoing, or did it happen once and it's over? Because that might be another resource for people.
The course is called Wake Up Productive. I believe it's evergreen. It's part of Evan Pagan's business trainings.
Okay. So maybe you can put that in the show notes also.
Definitely.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Hope this leads to more productivity. And of course, what that's all about is helping you get closer to whatever your goals are, you know, whether it's learning an instrument or accomplishing something with your work or vocation or improving your health. It's, you know, being more productive is the key to personal fulfillment and success. And being able to increase your productivity in a way that doesn't compromise any of those other areas of your life is a real art and skill set that you have to cultivate and develop. So I hope that this will take you another step in that direction.
Yeah, we can't wait. Chris and I both know that we can learn a lot from other people. So if you have some tips in these two areas that Chris talked about today that really work for you, hopefully you'll leave those in the comments and just stimulate a good discussion about getting more productive.
Absolutely. It'll be hopefully become the authoritative productivity hacking thread.
Awesome. Well, thanks everyone for listening. Stay tuned for part two.
See you next time.